Bring yourself back online.
Welcome back to Freeze All Motor Functions, a Westworld podcast that doesn't sound like anything to me and doesn't take itself too seriously, presented by Bolin Media. We are here today to break down and digest Minions, Rise of... No, not really. I kind of wish...
Banana!
We're here to break down and digest Season 4, Episode 3 of HBO's Westworld. I am your host, Jared Borislow, known to many as J-Bone, joined as always by Akichita's number one horse tamer, Mr. Ross Bolin.
Look here, see? I'm disappointed, though, that we're three episodes in and into the, you know, 1930s gangster season of Westworld, and we're yet to hear a, look here, see?
Yeah, we did get
look
the...
Look here, copper.
It's 1920s, Ross. Let's
sorry,
get
20s,
our decades.
30s. What am I, a dictionary? Look at my hat, though.
Yeah, Ross is wearing a, what's that called, a bowling hat? A pork pie?
I wanted to say bolo hat, but bolo tie is a thing.
Is it a bowler hat?
Yes, bowler hat. Ron Bowler, yes. Because Ron Bowler is your nickname.
That's fantastic. Wonderful. Yeah. But I'm trying to Google bowler hat to confirm. It is. It's a bowler hat. Thank you. I stole this from my Mimi. That's my mother's mom. And now it's mine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we did get to see a Tommy gun absolutely singing.
We did.
That was cool.
We did.
During the... yes.
Love a good Tommy gun. But I don't have a Tommy gun prop. I only have the hat.
It's probably good. It's probably good.
Maybe next week, Jared.
I hope not. I'm also joined by the woman who made a 1 to 27 scale sculpture of the tower out of toothpicks just so she could get a better feel for its neo-modernist architecture to potentially discuss on the podcast, Serena. How's it going, Serena?
Hi. I'm severely lacking in toothpicks, and I apologize to my roommate if he planned on making finger sandwiches this week.
Oh, yeah.
Or any time in the future, as there is now a nationwide shortage.
Yes.
Toothpicks are pretty useful, but like, you got to put the little olive on top if you're going to use it in a finger sandwich.
Aren't they bad for your teeth, though, the toothpick? That's why I got the water pick.
Well, if you eat them, yes. You're not. It's not advised to eat toothpicks.
Right, right. Especially
Wait,
not
really?
Whole.
Yeah.
If you're going to eat the toothpick, please chew.
Yes.
Thoroughly.
Do you remember, did you watch Hard Knocks a couple years ago? There was one NFL player who played in the NFL with a toothpick in his mouth. I'm like, sir, you're going to impale your uvula.
That is dumb shit there.
Extremely dumb. Extremely dumb. Okay, let's jump right into breaking down this episode of Westworld. The title of Westworld Season 4, Episode 3 is Anal Follies, which is what Ross's stripper name was back in college when he was working his way through journalism school.
That's true. Everybody knows I paid for journalism school by being a male stripper and my stage name, as it were, Anal Follies. Is
Sorry.
The name of this episode coincidentally? Oh, no, that's not it.
No, it's Anne Foll.
I don't think that's English.
It's not. It's French, Ross.
For anal follies.
No. Well, it's French for crazy years. Crazy years. Which is actually also what your college was like.
It is. Yeah. That's also everyone's college experience, I think, except for yours, as you maintain virginity throughout.
Well, until you're 21, it's illegal. So
that's true. Everybody knows that.
So the crazy years, my friend Will Capadia tells me, was the decade of the 1920s in France. It was coined to describe the rich social, artistic, and cultural collaborations of the period. The same period is also referred to as the Roaring Twenties or the Jazz Age in the United States. And in Germany, it is sometimes referred to as the Golden Twenties because of the economic boom that followed World War One. I didn't think Germany did that well after World War One, which is kind of how World War Two happened. So it's kind of confusing to me.
Yeah. Question. Who told you this?
Oh, Will Capadia.
It was just a random friend of yours?
Okay, it's Wikipedia.
Oh, wow. Right over my head, Jared. Right over my bowler hat.
As far as the episode description goes, it is, quote, "You can never go back again, but if you do, bring a shovel."
Fuck these stupid descriptions.
Yeah, I didn't like this one at all.
We got a poem. We got a...
Yeah.
Look, they're just screwing with us, all right? That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And the descriptions for this show as... The same thing applies to the next week on Westworld. Y'all aren't even watching them. You're not missing anything. They show you 2-second cuts of like 15 different scenes. You cannot decipher a single thing that is occurring. And I'm completely fine with that. Don't care. Fine. Don't give me anything in the description. Don't give me anything in the featured image. Don't give me anything in the next time on Westworld. Just give me the info during the show.
I agree. I do not like those. Like, I think there should be no... There are spoilers in there, because you see some things. I did watch this one, and I was like, oh, that kind of looks like Solomon or Rehoboam. So now that's in my head, but it could be a red herring.
Yeah, dude, I hate this shit. I have one more point, Serena, and then I want to hear your thoughts, because I know you're a Sopranos fan. I'm a huge fan of The Sopranos. Watching it right now on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles with Barrett Dudley, my host on OCC, my co-host on OCC, rather. But during The Sopranos, now this aired, The Sopranos, before HBO Max or streaming existed, right? But now, if you went to watch The Sopranos for the first time, a lot of the featured images for the episodes are pretty clear-cut spoilers. Like,
really?
Where you're like, oh, what the hell? Where you now you know a major thing is coming.
It'd be like Jimmy Walnuts getting shivved, or just, I don't know,
yes,
the show.
Like,
I've never
yes,
seen the show.
Jimmy Walnuts getting shivved. And you're just like, what the fuck is this, man? This is, it's really disappointing, and I don't know why HBO doesn't go back and change that. And I appreciate Westworld lacking any and all information in their both descriptions and their pictures for the episodes.
Mm-hmm. So on A Full, the crazy years, I think there's obviously the main connection to the new Delos Park that takes place in the 1920s. That seems kind of on the nose with that one.
What do you mean?
Well, the crazy years was the 1920s, and then the Delos theme park is the 1920s, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's okay. Kind of what I got. But also, Bernard spent some crazy years in the Sublime running his simulations.
It's robot heaven, Jared.
Robot heaven.
Love it.
That's where all the robot dogs went. Remember Robo Dog?
No.
It was like a. It was
this
like
on
a,
the Jetsons?
No. It was.
They had
it
a
was,
dog though, didn't they?
They did. Spot.
Was it a? Wasn't it a robot though?
It
wasn't. Spot.
It was not. I want to say Elroy, but that was the kid.
That was the kid.
Rover. What the hell was the dog's name?
I don't know, dude. I'm googling it. Give me a fucking break. Rosie was the maid.
Oh, yeah.
Astro. There we
yes,
go.
Of
Sorry,
course.
Listeners, yelling at your yes. radios.
As far as that stupid description goes, we see people going back places, and that's as far as we need to go with that. One of them has a shovel, and it's Bernard. Cold open time. Again, another cold open. Is every episode going to have a cold open?
We still don't know, Jared, because we can't see the future, unlike Bernard.
Ooh.
But, yeah, I think it's pretty clear that they're going to do these often now.
Serena, thoughts?
I think we're going to be done as soon as we're done introducing all of our old friends, which I think we're at right now. So,
you think we're done next week?
No,
we'll go regular opening?
That's my prediction. I've been wrong before. Not a lot this week, though. So,
see, I like the overuse of it now. I'm going to change my stance. It's called reverse psychology. Cold open every week. Suddenly, you're relaxed. The cold open doesn't mean shit anymore. And then they hit you with a regular opening. And then that's the intense episode.
I disagree. You saw me tweet this morning, like, because I was watching the show, and I still find it really jarring when it doesn't go straight to theme song. And I find it even more jarring when it's not the theme song I expect it to be.
Yeah,
I'm
telling you. The Curb Your Enthusiasm plays in my head. So I can't even get past, oh my God, look, it's Bernard. Because I'm hearing, da na 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 na. And I'm thinking about all the different jokes, like how I'm the son of a doctor, and so I can prescribe medication. But this might be my favorite cold open yet, I will say. We all got to see what Bernard experienced during his very long Sublime Vision Quest thing in the Motel 6 in Season 3 while wearing his MetaQuest 7 VR headset, which you can buy for $399 on Meta's website. And Bernard, as we see, was guided through this past of his towards the tower by a white horse who we later learn to have been under the control of former Ghost Nation leader Akichita, from Season 2. Very happy that we got Akichita back. One of my favorite actors from the entire series. Did you guys like this reveal of having Akichita back?
I liked the reveal of having Akichita back, but what I liked even more was being right when I said that Bernard was going to be the cold open this week.
You did say that.
Yeah, I also just expect at this point to be introduced to every single character that the show has ever had, because that's what we're doing. So, yeah, I mean, I was stoked to see dude. I believe he's in the Valley Beyond, right?
Yeah, the Sublime, Valley Beyond, yes.
Which apparently is the same thing as the Sublime, and it's like, it's the metaverse. That's what it is. It's the metaverse, and this entire show is just a commercial made by Mark Zuckerberg mm-hmm. to get you to join the metaverse at this point.
I'm surprised it's not on Facebook Watch, but it's because they couldn't fit it in 15-minute increments.
Sure. Good joke for everyone who knew Facebook Watch existed, which is probably 10% of our audience. And have you ever watched anything on there?
Real Bros of Simi Valley.
That's it, though, right?
It's the only thing
just
I've ever watched.
Jimmy Tatro.
Real Bros.
Yep.
And that's only because we have a personal connection to him, being a dear, dear friend of the show. But, yeah, so, okay, this dude, Bernard, has been chilling in the Schitt's Creek Motel for we don't really know how long, wearing the that dude from Star Trek's sunglasses, and that allows him to go into robot heaven.
Yes.
While he's there, Ashley Stubbs is just living life, coming and going, keeping an eye on his boy, making sure the rent gets paid so that they don't come and try to clean the room, keeping the housekeepers out. Maybe they just clean around him, but they certainly didn't dust him.
No.
Which is rude. Get a lint roller.
Yes.
If I ever do this, Jared, go into the Sublime. For Christ's sake, dust me off.
Yeah, if you ever are doing one of your meditations and I go in and hit repeat so you just meditate forever, I will dust you off.
At least dust me off if you keep me,
or I'll shake you
stranded
off
in the Sublime.
I'll do something off to you.
But while he's there, after Akechita guides him with a white horse to...
Yes.
For whatever, he essentially becomes, like, godlike.
Yes, he does.
Bernard, because he experiences every possible version of reality, everything that did happen or could have happened, and everything that will happen or could happen.
Yes. Isn't that crazy?
So he goes full Rick and Morty here, though. Like, he has every version of every reality in his head.
Yes. Him and Akechita talk, and Bernard's like, I want to save the humans. And Akechita's like, it's kind of weird of you to want to save them, considering
all
that shit.
You could just chill here with
happens.
Us.
Yeah, you could just, like, stay here. And he's like, no. And Akechita's like, well, fine. If you're going to do
like,
that.
You love them, don't you?
Well, yeah. He's like,
why don't you fucking marry him, pussy?
And Akechita's just like, okay, if you're going to go and do that, you fucking weirdo, you might as well just run all these simulations while you're here so you can find out exactly what's going to happen in the future. And then you can decide if you want to go back. And he does the simulations, and Akechita's like, what'd you see? And Bernard's like, well, I saw that I'm going to die if I go out there. And Akechita's like, you still want to go? And then he goes.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, wow, what a threat, because death means a whole lot to these guys on this show. No way to bring them back once they go. Everybody knows that.
Nope, not at all. Yeah. Well, unless maybe he knows this is his real death, which to us is, again, we don't really know.
Sure. I mean, look, Dolores had a real death. She had to sacrifice herself to some end, a version of herself to save the humans. And I think that Bernard having that parallel fate is pretty, poetic, poignant, if you will. But it is a cool idea. I mean, the way this unfolds, again, it's trackable. And that's why I'm still very, very happy, even more so after episode 3, because this is all trackable. And it makes sense. It's logical. Yes. It's insane. And some of it is just flat out stupid in terms of the decision making of the characters, which we'll get to. But it's trackable. Yes. I understand what's happening. And it's put into words and in lines that I'm like, that made sense to me. And I don't have to stop and Google 6 different words and read a whole poem. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's actually something I can follow, and I like the story.
And if you didn't understand it in the cold open, Bernard literally lays it out to Stubbs in the diner in plain words not long after.
And not in a way that makes you like, oh, this is so fucking on the nose. Yes. Like, you're just like, yes, thank you. I can appreciate that I can absorb this, right?
This scene, though, has risen some questions. Ross, do you agree with me that Bernard, with his new clairvoyance abilities, given all his simulation knowledge, is now the most powerful character in the show? Because in his brain somewhere...
Powerful is an interesting word. The wisest, for sure. I mean, he's the Bran of Westworld now.
Yes.
He just became the Bran Stark of Westworld.
Who did end up being king.
And
the
also,
greatest ending in TV history.
And the greatest ending in the history of television, spoiler alert, Game of Thrones ended spectacularly, and Bran was not at all potentially an evil future seer the entire time who just wanted power and control. But in Bernard's case, he's obviously he's a white hat, right? Like you right now.
You're wearing the white
cowboy hat, I'm wearing the black bowler hat. And Bernard is a white hat. He's a good heart, good soul. Akechita says, like, you love them. You clearly fell in love with the human beings and their potential or the beauty of humanity, right? And all of that tracks, too, because Bernard has had enough experience both believing he was human, finding out he wasn't, and knowing that he was at one point to understand humanity very, very well. So he has this great appreciation for it. He wants to go back and save it. Akechita hooks him up with the full-blown game pass, or what was it called back in the day, the thing you would hook up your game to be able to cheat your
game
ass
shark.
Off. Yeah, the game shark of Westworld. And now he's got all the information he needs.
Somewhere in his head is exactly how the whole story ends. All of Westworld, the entire series, somewhere in his head. He just has to narrow down all the possibilities, which I presume he will be doing for the entire rest of the series.
It also is amazing watching Bernard operate now as this kind of omniscient, whatever, presence, because he's always been very, like, not monotone, but, like, low-key with his energy, with his emotions. And now that he knows everything, he's almost more beaten down.
Kind of cocky.
And subdued.
It's kind of cocky, though.
He's just like, I didn't tell you you were about to be shot because I knew she was going to save you. Let's just move on to the next scene.
Yeah.
That's Bernard now.
Stubbs, I feel like, doesn't like it at all.
Eh, he also enjoys watching it unfold, That's though, true. I feel like. He's impressed.
He does say you came back even weirder than when you left, which, to be fair, is what Ross says to us every week when we leave and regather for
That's
fam.
True. That's the exact same thing I say.
That's completely true.
But the show did come back less weird than when we left. It's in a much better place. I'm very happy.
Another question. Serena, I want to start with you here. Why do you think Bernard is willing to give up his life to save humanity?
I think it's because of what Ross just said about he's had a taste of being human, because that's kind of what kept Dolores, like, that was her, well, Charloris, that was her big turn, right? Is that she loved her human child and they took it away from her. So now she's going scorched earth. But I think it's once you have that taste of what humanity actually is, you're maybe more sympathetic to it.
It's like Pringles. Once you pop, the fun don't stop.
Bet you can't eat just one.
What's that?
That's Lay's.
Okay. I can, because especially if it's regular plain Lay's, I will eat none, actually.
Dick.
If I ate one, I would not eat any more.
Bet you can't eat just one.
Ross, why do you think? Do you think it's because of his taste of humanity, and that's really all it is?
Yeah, the taste he developed for human flesh.
Interesting. He just wants to have more humans to eat.
Yep.
And most importantly, do you both agree that the wolf that we saw in the Westworld massacre scene is Dr. Ford's dog, Jock, in host form? Thank you. Yeah, I know you do.
Goes without saying, yeah.
We saw Jock and the wolf. What do you mean? They're in the same place.
Amazing seeing the wolf. For those of you who are just joining us, Jared has been carrying on outlandish theories revolving around the wolf since season one
season
or two?
One. Season one.
One.
It's my thing I hold on to. The thing I'm like, it's going to come into play. And I'm already picturing the end of the series. The final thing is going to be the wolf attacks Charloris, kills her, and then Bernard saves the world by giving up his own life.
I do have an off theory that one of the writers of this show listens to FAMP and is only keeping the wolf in there to appease you.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy we had this freaking wolf. What do you mean we saw the wolf and Jock? Jock is the wolf, in my theory.
Who the fuck is Jock?
It's Dr. Ford's Greyhound.
We literally see Jock is the Greyhound, right? He's in the background in one of the shots, and the wolf is in a different one. I swear I didn't make this up.
What?
I didn't see. Maybe I have selective not seeing Jock.
How is it that every week you two manage to make a confusing show more confusing? How?
Jared, is this like, remember how they're like Bernard can't see stuff because he's a host? Is this like you can't see Jock because of the wolf?
Jock doesn't look like anything to me.
Well, I saw the wolf. I didn't see a greyhound.
Yeah, what?
And I don't remember a greyhound, nor do I care for one or whoever the fuck Jock is. But I did see the wolf and it was tight.
Sipping greyhounds way below the ground in my very own TV show. The Father John Misty line.
Wow.
To finish off the Bernard and Stubbs storyline. To finish off the Bernard and Stubbs storyline this episode, first off, I find it very hard to believe that the Road's End Diner in bumfuck nowhere, where people can be killed in the parking lot with impunity, has the world's best pastrami melt. That sounds like false advertising.
I mean, how do we know? This is like a post-apocalyptic scenario. There may be very few pastrami melts left.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. Also, there's not a whole lot of, you know, like, checks and balances in terms of the advertising that goes on at small-town diners. There's not, like, an FCC representative rolling through and checking the menu. But this part, watching this unfold where, like, Bernard can tell Ashley Stubbs everything that's going to happen, he's like, well, I think I'm going to get the fucking pastrami melt. And Stubbs is like, you'll settle for the tuna. And then he's like, I'll settle for the tuna. And it all unfolds. Like, I love this shit. Watching this was, again, I'm going to use the word fun. I'm having fun. Again, hashtag fun.
Well, it's giving video games, right? Because do you remember when those, like, pick your path games came out? The one that stood out to me was Until Dawn. And it was like, if you made one choice, it affected the entire path of the game. So I feel like this season we're getting a lot of that video game back to the meta to the point where that's literally Christina's job. So when we have these moments in the real world, it's kind of fun because it's like art imitates life, imitates art.
Also, the only world that I'm confident isn't like some kind of active simulation is Bernard. Like, I feel like he's the only person operating in a timeline that I can be confident of, right? Like, at least it feels like that.
Well, and it's funny because when we open in the Sublime, we see that aspect ratio thing again that they do when they go into a thing within a thing. And I'd forgotten that they did that. So now I would have noticed, it's very jarring. I would have noticed if we'd seen it before, but I wonder if them bringing that back was to remind us like, hey, like we do this when we go somewhere else.
Yeah. And to me, what that showed me was that Bernard decided not to stay in the Sublime. And what we're watching is not him like trying to save the world, but in his own little Sublime where he never dies. That shows me, because there's no aspect ratio change, that we are actually in the real world. That's how I took that.
Well, and I agree, and I do think that's one of those, and we'll get into this more when we get into the Maeve Lib storyline, but it's one of those Easter eggs where if you've been along for the whole thing, it's going to mean something to you, and if you haven't, you'd have fun dissecting what that does mean.
Yes. So, for me, the Bernard and Stubbs storyline got two Mad Max Fury Road meets Star Wars-y at this diner scene. I thought it was very bizarre. You have Bernard using Jedi mind tricks on the woman in her desert vehicle who's pointing a gun at him before he asks her to be taken to the condemned lands. Now, I wish Maeve and Caleb had gone the Star Wars route, because maybe then they would have known that it's a trap. It's a trap. Because they fell for the trap.
Yeah. This episode, just like, I mean, really this show is borrowing a whole bunch of previously used themes and narrative devices. But that's how, you know, that's how TV and movies work for the most part. And that's how art works, right? You borrow from things that have been done and you change them up for yourself, put your own style. And that's what they're doing. I mean, there's a lot. My dad tried to say that they are getting dangerously close to like committing plagiarism against X-Files. Which is interesting. He's a huge X-Files guy, so he's tracking enough different things from X-Files. But I guarantee you a lot of those things that were in X-Files were taken from other sci-fi and mystery shit. So it's that's just the way it works. But there definitely is. I like that kind of thing when they're combining a whole, it's like a Frankenstein of all these different things that have been made in the past. But for sure, there's some Star Wars-y feel. There's some Mad Max post-apocalyptic stuff.
Ross,
it's cool, though.
As a shoe guy, do you agree with me that this woman's car looks like a cross between a Tesla Cybertruck and a Yeezy Boost 700?
Yeah, that's a really good, that's a very good description. That's
if a Yeezy Boost 700 was a car, it would be this woman's car.
Yeah. It's tight, though. I like it. I think it's great that they didn't just go grab a Cybertruck. That would have really bugged me.
I feel like this is the kind of car, Ross, that you'd be like, oh, man, such an ugly car. And then 3 months later, you're buying it for 300% markup on StockX.
And then I'd get it in the mail, and it wouldn't even be a legitimate version. Fucking knockoff of the car.
It's a Yeezum.
With a big skid on the back and shit. Yeah. Really annoying.
So we find out that Bernard killed those two dudes in the parking lot because one of them was a host who was trying to infiltrate this woman's group, the reality of which, ironically, he ended up using that whole situation to infiltrate their group. And the woman takes him to the Condemned Lands, and we discover the Condemned Lands contain a weapon, and Bernard knows the location. What do we think the weapon is? Do we think it's a Solomon type thing, a Rehoboam type thing? What are we thinking?
It's underneath the sand. That much I am confident of.
Same.
No idea what the weapon is, but it seems like the Condemned Lands are the areas that have been affected by they're contaminated, right?
I have a crackpot theory, but I want to hear Serena's first.
Mine is, I hope it's not yours. I think it has something to do with the tower, because he shows her that maze and she seems to know what that means. And I always said that the center of the maze for hosts was their journey inward to consciousness, and I feel like for humans the center of their maze is the tower, which goes upwards.
Okay, it's not my theory, my crackpot theory. So we know that they were in like Southern California, right? Pretty close to Mexico. We also know that Maeve and Caleb went on a mission to Mexico, I think
Sonora, right?
Sonora, to destroy Solomon. And I think that Solomon got buried. Do you guys say buried or buried?
Buried.
Okay, I think that's my dad's Philly slang getting into my verbiage, but I think Solomon is buried underneath the sand in the desert, and that's where they were taken, because that's a reasonable car length, you know? Southern California to Mexico.
There's no goddamn Solomon, Jared. We're not going backwards here. Leave it in the past.
I don't know.
It's gone. They destroyed Solomon, remember?
Well, if you do go back to find Solomon, make sure you bring a shovel.
Oh.
You think they're going to drag a plot device from one of the worst seasons in the history of TV into the new season where they have positive momentum and are actually building a good story? I don't think so.
Yes.
That's me pooping on your crazy theory.
Okay. Hey, we're all entitled to our crazy theories. Now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Life throws everyone curveballs from time to time, and going through those situations alone can prove extremely difficult and exhausting. Many, many people have found having a licensed professional who can help talk them through life's twists and turns to be extremely helpful, and that's what you'll get with BetterHelp. BetterHelp online therapy will assess your needs and can match you with your own licensed professional therapist in less than 48 hours.
Wow.
Very fast. Ross, everyone knows that you're a huge proponent of therapy. Why do you think everyone should try therapy?
Love therapy, Jared. A lot of people think, I don't have very serious issues. I don't need therapy. That's not really the point. Therapy is for everybody. All the human beings need therapy. Every single one of us, in my opinion. Life is difficult and challenging, and different stressors and anxieties crop up on you. And look, we all have things that we need an unbiased third party to talk through with. So BetterHelp is a great option. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online, available to people worldwide. Jared, it's great.
You can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you don't have to be on camera if you don't want to. And getting therapy every week is as easy as a few clicks on your laptop or phone. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist. Speaking of BetterHelp's therapists, here's an actual testimonial that a BetterHelp user gave about their licensed therapist, Lizbeth Moore. I have recommended the BetterHelp app to family and friends based on my exceptional experience with my therapist, Liz. Not only is she kind and empathetic, but she helps you self-analyze and gives you tools to be able to plan your own healing. I couldn't ask for more. BetterHelp is a great way to invest in yourself, and they have a special offer for our listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/famf. That's 10% off your first month of online therapy at betterhelp.com/famf. There's a link for that deal in the description of this episode.
Famf!
Famf! Okay, let's check in on Maeve and Caleb. And Serena, you're trying to make something happen, aren't you?
I think we should call them Maeve-leb.
Maeve-leb. That sounds like some Israeli dish.
Maeve-leb. Okay, that's
Jared
horrible.
Jared hates it.
Maeve, okay. I'll humor you. First off, well, I want to know what
God,
you...
Oh, God, why? Don't humor her.
Okay, I won't humor it. What do you guys think of 1920s world? Serena?
So as a whole, I can't tell if I love or hate the amount of callbacks we're getting. It's like so many nods that it's almost gimmicky, but it's also kind of genius because, like I said earlier, someone who doesn't dissect the show as part of their job would enjoy it without the context, but it's Easter eggs for those of us who do dissect it. And it's meta to the point where that guest even says, I want to find all the Easter eggs, which is like us finding all the Easter eggs. But there were points where I almost wanted to roll my eyes, but then I also thought it was kind of cool.
As Maeve said, they've made a few changes, but the story's the same. I think Lee Sizemore's replacement got very lazy and went for the whole good artist borrow, great artist steal thing, you know?
I did laugh when I saw that the Mariposa became the butterfly club.
Yeah. That's Ross, I don't know if you know this. I have a Spanish degree. So I can tell you right now that Mariposa is Spanish for butterfly.
Oh, wow. You know what? I didn't pick that up at all. Completely whiffed. But I think a part of this is definitely making some kind of statement about Hollywood and TV and art on the whole, probably, because they're just, it's like, to Serena's point, it's so over the top. Like, going in and, this isn't the first time we've done this. Going in and watching a whole new set of robots do the same fucking story from season one. We watched this happen in season two. We watched it happen in some version in season three, I think.
That's the police chief's car, say.
Yeah, it's like, I'm with you, Serena. I felt at different points a little bit annoyed. Like, maybe they're overusing this. This is good. We get it. They're you know, not making a whole new narrative for this park, and it's not about the narrative of the park, but at the same time, there was just a lot of moments where I was like, oh, okay, so this is the new version of the guy that she used to, like, kind of sort of maybe be in love with or whatever. Now he looks different and has all these different scars on his face.
Well, and Ross, to your point, on the commentary that they're making about Hollywood recycling, I also thought that there was a very poignant commentary done later where they realized, and I know we'll get into this more, but when they realized that they're reenacting the massacre, I felt like it was their nod at exploiting tragedy for profit in Hollywood. And I thought that that was actually, like, nice, subtle messaging, and that's when I became, like, slightly more okay with it. But that's because I do like when Hollywood makes fun of itself.
You could draw that from it, I think. Probably reading a little bit too far into it, in my opinion. But because that whole play for me was like, and again, we will get to it, but that was like, no, I'm gonna wait till we get to it.
So Maeve and Caleb are on a quest in the Golden Age Park to get underground, which totally isn't what Charloris expects and cannot possibly be a trap that they're walking right into. I can delay talking about this no longer. How in the name of shit are we supposed to believe Maeve Lib are dumb enough to have walked right into this trap? They were literally invited by Charloris. How do they not see this coming?
Because we've watched them do equally idiotic things the entire time Caleb has been on the show. And at this point, like, from episode one, I was like, where are they going? And it's because, like, they think people have discovered them and are out for them, right? But that's almost my point here is that they know it's a trap. Like, they know somebody's screwing with them, trying to get them, whatever. And based on how much these two have been through, they have to know that whoever that person is, it's likely they're going to succeed. So you kind of just have to give in to that part of it. You're going to get caught, but they assume there's some other game to it, right? All of this shit is just a big game and a puzzle to all these people. And Caleb is a halfwit who's just along for the ride. So, like, he'll pretty much do whatever Maeve says. Yeah, like, dude, I'm sorry. You found your fucking kid in this place. And you thought it was really your kid?
Well, that part I can understand because I think he knows that Charloris sent him there. Maybe she thinks it was because so he would be, like, watch his daughter kill herself.
Okay.
I have a question.
So you're just
about
copying
that
to also being a doofus.
Yes, Serena?
Do you think we, as the viewer, were at any point supposed to think that was actually her? Because they did that cut, right, where she's, like, in the closet, and then they show her in Westworld, or sorry, in fucking 1920s world.
But yes.
Like, do they think we're that dumb?
No. Not that we're dumb, but, I mean, it's like, they want to give you a little bit of, like, oh, is it the real her? Like, at least to make you somewhat sympathize with how stupid Caleb is.
Now,
then they shouldn't have fucking put her opening her mouth with the flies in the trailer.
Yes. That, I legitimately may have believed, potentially, probably wouldn't have, but maybe there would be a chance I believe it if I didn't go, oh, that's the fucking fly trap.
See, I think they're counting on enough people to be either stupid or stoned enough to not remember that. Because I didn't remember, that wasn't like some, again, at no point was I like, wow, they already got his daughter all the way from wherever the fuck she was to here and in this room where clearly these other people that are around in this area are not real. So that might be his real daughter. No, but it was like just for the suspense of the viewers, you know, I think they just kind of like did it for fun. So because what we wanted to know was she captured, right? We didn't know at that point if his daughter had actually been taken or not. So that's the piece of it that's still up in the air for us. But at that point, anyway, it just this whole Caleb is a dumbass, and watching him shoot a Tommy gun was somehow disappointing, which is hard to do. I feel like it's hard to disappoint with a Tommy gun in your hand. And yet he did.
One of my favorite moments of this episode, if not my favorite, was when we realized Maeve and Caleb are not underground, but are rather in the Westworld Massacre Easter egg. I thought that was a very funny thing to do because it plays into what the man in black said entering the park about how, like, you know, oh, that past chapter is sad, but it was really profitable. And the fact that they would make fun of all the actual human beings who died in that massacre by putting it as an Easter egg into this world is hilarious to me.
But is all of this stuff we're seeing actually the setup of this world? Like, all right, we saw the man in black pull the switch to turn 1920s gangster world on.
Yes.
Right? Now, I'm not confident that happening was, were Maeve and Caleb walking into the park as it activated?
Yes.
Okay. So
they were the first people to come to this park.
Okay.
There was a group of people on the roof who were probably like shareholders and investors who were like there to watch the park go, but they weren't like actually like guests in the park, really. I took it. And then there was people who came in on the train who were like the guests, but maybe the people on the roof were also.
But so going. You think the part of the show we see this week where Maeve and Caleb are fighting against the new Dolores and her squad that's trying to take over and doing the Westworld massacre, that's all just part of the park?
It's an Easter egg that they put into this park as a nod to like letting people actually fight in the Westworld massacre.
Okay, well then that would go back and reinforce Serena's earlier thought that this is a nod to like Hollywood profiting off of tragedy.
When you said she went too far?
Yeah, well, I mean, we weren't here yet. Now I agree. If you tie this part of it into it, then for sure. Because in my mind, I wasn't watching this unfold going, oh, this is what every guest who comes to this park will experience. I thought this entire situation was specifically catered to capturing Maeve and Caleb. Not,
yeah.
So I thought they really were underground. I thought this really was the office area for this new park, but that it had been set up and all this stuff is occurring to trap these two, specifically in this instance.
So the way that it connects is that Vanessa Bayer from Saturday Night Live, who makes I don't know if you call it a cameo or if she's an actress. It's like one of those weird, like, gray areas.
Well, is she playing herself?
She might have been.
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, she says, oh, there's an Easter egg I know that's better than Pariah. And we find out that this is the Easter egg. It's that you can come to the park and be in the Westworld.
Participate in the massacre.
In the fake underground that is above the real underground.
Oh, man.
That's why I loved it. Cool. I thought that was really funny and very well done.
Yes, that is. Then I definitely go back and erase my attack on Serena earlier.
So in the actual underground, droids are transporting maggots and doing lab work. And we find out that Serena's preseason theory about both the flies and the tone are 100% correct. Serena, please clap. I don't know why you clap for yourself.
For yourself,
whatever.
Okay.
Serena, please elaborate on how correct you were.
So I think this is the underside of the tower, and this is going to be the origin of the song with no words that's killing them, which would track because Maeve says, oh, you can't hear that. It must be at a frequency that you can't hear, which means she can hear it, but he can't, which explains why that crazy man on the high line was like, it's a song with no words. It's killing them. So what I'm still trying to work out in my head, and I'd love your opinion on this, is I'm thinking at this point that the chime controls the flies, which are attracted to the organic matter, and then the flies in turn control the people. I'm not sure if the humans have to be infected by the flies for it to work yet, or if they're testing out using the tone as the thing that does the control. Do you guys have a thought?
Ross?
Here's
my take on what Serena said. I believe that the flies have to infect a person for the tones to control them. But Serena is saying maybe they're testing out the tone as a replacement for the flies. But I think that that's...
All right. Back up. We're talking about the fact that she was correct that the flies are being used to control humans,
yes.
Right? Then now the question is what the tone has to do with all of it. Is that what y'all are asking? Okay. I think the tones activate currently flies infect the humans, and by infect I mean crawl into their body in some way, and then once those humans have been infected, they're susceptible to the tones that can be, you know, rung out into the air at any time to control or activate those humans that have been infected by flies. That was my read based on everything we see with his daughter and shit.
Yeah, I get that.
Does make me terrified of flies. There's an excessive amount of flies in my backyard because I have four dogs and they shit everywhere, and it's 1,000 degrees outside and it heats up the shit, and then the flies come, and so I'm pretty thoroughly paranoid at this point.
There's also, we see a lot of flies in the 1920s park, both flying around the homeless guy, and also Maeve flicks one off the table and says it's dirty.
Yeah, important thing to remember here, this entire park is being set up, run by robots. Every park we've seen, Delos, all that shit, those were human beings behind it all, trying to get data, right, to use against other human beings and to use in the whole AI experience. But this is not that. This is Charlotte Hale, a.k.a. Charloris, a.k.a. OG Dolores, or a version of her, and the Man in Black, who's not the real Man in Black, who's a robot copy of the Man in Black, creating their own park to now entrap the humans and also use fly. It's like, I don't know, they've got so many weapons. The fly thing alone is so OP.
It is.
Like we talked about last week.
When they're flies.
Dude, you need one of these suckers, and they get fucking Aaron Paul's daughter to unleash the whole full-blown Green Mile load on this dude's face. He's got 500 flies on his face. He's never going to be able to make a decision by himself again.
Yep. Now, I have to hit my quota here, and thus must note that the scene of Maeve and Caleb looking at the humans being controlled by the tones, you know, like, they're like, there's a table in front of them.
Oh, these glorious tones.
Now, the humans are playing with blocks on the table, which is almost certainly a reference to Frabel's gifts. And if you want to learn all about Frabel's gifts, check out a recent episode of 99% Invisible titled Inheriting Frabel's Gifts.
What is wrong with, did you just put an ad for a show we don't even own in here?
I've done that every single time because it's an amazing podcast and somehow it keeps being relevant.
That's a better plug than you've ever done for RBP.
Also, listen to the Ross Bolin podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
We don't talk about Frabel's gifts, though, straight up.
We actually should. It's pretty interesting. It's how kindergarten got started.
Well, it's too late. You already plugged 99%, and they're going to do a great job or whatever.
They did do a really good job.
Roman Mars, man.
Roman Mars. Maeve and Caleb see Frankie on the screen, as we said earlier, except that ain't Frankie. It's a fly dispenser, and it's sick them flies on Caleb. Where do we think Maeve and Caleb now are after the events that we just saw?
What you mean, where did they get taken after this?
Where did they get taken? What's next for them? Like,
I think we're going to go right back to where we end here to see what happens. I mean, it feels too, like, incomplete, because that was the last thing we saw of Maeve and Caleb, right? Was all the flies attacking him and Maeve, like, running over, right?
Yeah, yes.
And yeah. Maeve got crawl into his ear.
Yeah, we saw he's now under control of the flies, we are led to believe.
I mean, I guess they could be captured right here, but by who?
By the Man in Black. He's right there.
Oh, yeah. Man in Black comes busting in.
Yeah. And then another version of him after Maeve kills the one, because there's multiple of them, apparently.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of him now.
I'm a different man than I used to be.
That was a dumbass line. Did not like that line.
No, bad line.
But I also get it at this point. That dude doesn't have good lines. He's not supposed to. He's the Man in Black, and he just has stupid, badass guy lines like that.
He's a robot.
That, where you're just
he
like,
is a robot.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Caleb is now a sleeper cell with the flies in him, right?
Well, but he's not, though, because doesn't Maeve know what just happened to him?
Yes.
Who else is he besties with? Who's going to give a shit that it's the fake Caleb? You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. She knows. That's why I don't know the answer to your question. Yeah. What happens next for these two? It's like, I legitimately have no idea.
It's like a zombie. If Ross gets bitten by a zombie, I'm like, oh, shit, Ross is like about to be a zombie. Like, at any moment, Ross could be a zombie.
Yeah, but it'd be like if I was bit by a zombie in a zombie factory that I visited willingly. You know what I mean? It's like, well, what's going to happen to Ross? I don't know. They're okay. Trapped already. They've completely fucked themselves. They're in the park. They're the only people seemingly in the park, right? Are there other guests?
Yes. I'm Vanessa Bayer.
I don't remember. But
She's the Easter egg one. Who's that was cathartic.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just don't. Maeve is not capable of being infected by these flies,
no,
right?
She's not.
She does seem to figure out a way to use her super Maeve brain to get into this system, unlock the door, let Caleb in to see his daughter. So she's starting to figure out how to do whatever.
But
with
Charloris
this.
Wanted that to happen because she wanted Caleb to be infected, as Frankie, the host, says.
Yeah, which feels a little silly because it's like, okay, you wanted him to be infected. You had him the second he walked in, and or you have an army of fucking flies you could send out to infect guy, right? So I don't really know. There's got to be a reason they wanted these two back in this park.
I think they wanted them to see their plan so that they're like, we're going to kill them, but we want them to see what we're doing first. So they had them explore, had them figure out everything that was going on.
The James Bond villain thing.
Yes, exactly.
All right, let's give them all the information that we wouldn't normally want them to have because it doesn't matter because we are assuming we're going to catch or kill them. Yeah, it's
exactly.
Fucking stupid. Just for the record, if you're ever going to be a villain, don't do that.
Agreed. Serena,
I
any
think
thoughts?
They want Caleb for a different reason.
Oh,
a different reason than what?
They want to make out with him and kiss him?
Yeah, they just want to like shave his beard. She wants to do another beard shaving scene. We get one of those every season. No, I think so. sorry, this is going to be a bit of an explanation, but we see a lot of parallels to the William and Dolores storyline from season one with Maeve and Caleb. I mean, people pointed out that shot for shot, last episode, when he's entering Westworld, it looks a lot like when William entered Westworld. And one thing we did get from last season was this scene where, well, so we know that William chose White Hat and then he went Black Hat, and his whole sob story was like, oh, well, I was a victim. I had this like really terrible childhood. But then in that episode where he goes inside his own mind, we see a different version where it sounded like initially his mom was in this abusive relationship, and then his dad comes in and says that like William punched a kid at school for no reason. And then we start to wonder, okay, was this guy a bad apple all along? Was he always Black Hat and he tried to go White Hat, but due to the nature of his humanity, could never go that direction? And then, sorry, but we get another little callback to that, because when Caleb and Maeve enter Westworld, Bad Guy by Billie Eilish is the song playing on the player piano, which had to be a callback to William being like, oh, I'm the good guy. Like, that is certainly not on accident. So I think Caleb was always the outlier, and they tried to reprogram him. They tried to make him not an outlier so they could predict his behavior. I think Charloris knows that the key to saving humanity somehow lies with Caleb because he is the outlier. And Bernard, in his infinite wisdom, can't actually predict an outcome that involves Caleb because he was an outlier. But I think Charloris has some knowledge that he's a thing that could throw off the whole plan. So she needs him taken out of the equation so that they can predict an outcome.
Holy shit.
Does that make any sense?
That's, so anyway, my simpleton version of it is that this dude is definitely mirroring the Man in Black, but only for the reason to show that, like, again, no human being is pure White Hat, pure Black Hat. This dude didn't pick a hat. He's in the park. I think certainly we're going to see him doing some bad shit, as he has now been infected by a fly or 500 of them. But I'm not sure how much we're supposed to read into, like, I mean, look, they've slapped William's fucking hair on the guy. Like, he's got the exact haircut, right? So it's like, beyond the fact that they're enjoying themselves doing all these parallels, showing us, like, the mirror from season one, and showing us that the park is sort of always the same setup, and, like, people are all the same. It's almost like getting into the Kendrick Lamar territory, where he did for one of his music videos, or for N95 or whatever, off his latest album. It said, like, I am all of you, or everyone is everyone. It's the stupid fucking Vince Vaughn speech from Wedding Crashers. Like, every human is every human type of situation. Like, we're all in a shared experience thing. Like, that's the direction the show feels like it's moving at this point for me. Because to Serena's explanation, there is nothing particularly special about Caleb to me. There's no reason he should be the savior of the human race. We didn't watch him fight in any of the wars or the conflict that happened after season three. We've never seen him do anything heroic for the most part, right? Like, I mean, he's just kind of a goober out there who does dumb shit, like think that this robot is his real daughter. I don't know what it is that they want him for, but I have a hard time being sold on, like, it's because he's some special Neo type of character that's going to save everybody if they don't stop him, right? Like, he doesn't strike me as the threat. I'm curious to what they're going to do with him, obviously. But to me, he strikes me just more of like, well, they've infected him with a fly now. He's one of their foot soldiers.
Yeah.
And Maeve is going to have to try to save him somehow or something. But yeah, I don't know, man. I do think they've done a good job with Aaron Paul's character. Maybe they tried to give him a little bit too much last year, and they've sort of reined it back into where it's like, okay, Aaron, you're just one of the 30 characters on the show now. You know what I mean? It's not like he's like front and center, Aaron Paul, the action hero. I don't think they're going to make that mistake. And I'm hoping he is not special for that reason.
But I think that's, so the Westworld season one marketing was every hero has a code, right? And then we see that code get horribly, horribly turned in on itself. And then I think that this whole Caleb storyline is going to be if William had been a good guy. like what it actually would have been if William had been White Hat is what Caleb is going to end up being. He doesn't choose a side, but his nature is inherently good. And if you don't want to go all in, I can see the hesitancy to go all in on like he's going to be the savior of everyone. Even if they don't believe that, they do think that he's an outlier. And they could not, that was the whole thing about
what is an outlier?
Is it could not predict the behavior of these outliers.
That was a season three thing.
But I thought they did predict his behavior and that he was going to be a fucking construction worker and then kill himself.
But he hasn't done any of that.
So he's a construction worker,
though,
still.
The whole thing was like, they tried to reprogram him to make him something they could predict, but they couldn't do it.
But isn't the they in all of your sentences right now Rehoboam, which is gone?
Yeah, but Rehoboam wasn't controlling him. It was just predicting him. So even though Rehoboam's gone, it doesn't change the story.
Who is they now?
So Rehoboam was able to predict the future. Just because Rehoboam is gone doesn't mean that future is not still predicted.
The data still stands, whether or not the machine is holding.
Right, but okay, back to him being an outlier or whatever. Like, I thought they did have a prediction on him.
They did, and he's not committed suicide yet, like he was supposed to, I believe.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, this is the part where y'all get me more confused than I was, man.
To be fair, that was mostly Serena this time.
I know. Sorry.
I'm just defending her.
I also had a thought that like this is their chance to show like the other side of mental illness because they've done this whole like Man in Black, like mental illness. He says like, oh, I'm neuroatypical or neurodivergent or whatever. And they show this kind of like shitty person with mental illness. And now we know that Caleb has this history of mental illness and it's like the good side of that. And I think the other thing that they're getting at, and I'm sorry, this really is the last thing I'll say. I had a lot of thoughts about it this week, is that sometimes the hero is just some guy. Like, it doesn't always have to be...
Not all heroes wear capes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But here's my, like... Okay, here's my real point. I don't like it if that's the story, because we don't know enough humans. Who are the other humans on the show?
Well, there's a one guy we just saw who shot himself in the head. He seemed kind of chill.
the people we had to watch commit suicide?
Yes.
Yeah, so the only other humans we know on the show are slaves... Right?
Well, they're going down that path.
And Vanessa Bayer.
I'm saying name a human character.
Vanessa Bayer's character. Oh, a named human character.
Name
no.
a human character on this show that is not
Caleb. Potentially Maya, potentially Christina, potentially their boss. End scene.
Potentially his wife and kid.
Potentially,
Uwade and Frankie.
What if Frankie was a robot the whole time? What if his wife was never a human being? We have no idea what we're looking at yet from that perspective, right? So
true.
It's like... It's just, that's the reason I'm not so, I don't want this like Aaron Paul, savior of the world. We tried that in season three. Nobody gave a shit. Give me something different. And I'm hoping that he just falls into the human slave race with all these other people that are stuck in this fucking
the
building.
Rat race?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the rat race. It's just an analogy for the rat race, J-Bone. But no, I mean, I think we get Maeve back in our hero situation, and obviously Bernard and Ashley Stubbs are going to come in some form. But I don't know, man. I don't know what to expect with Aaron Paul.
Just ask Bernard.
After this fly thing, right?
Just ask Bernard.
Yeah.
He knows. Unsolicited movie recommendation, Rat Race. One of my favorite comedies.
An incredibly
great movie.
Yeah, dude. It's one of those ones that is so weirdly...
John Cleese.
The first time you see it, you don't leave the theater like, well, that was fucking amazing. But then like the eighth time you've watched it on TV, because it just keeps being on in hotels over like a 15-year span, you love it.
I had it on VHS. So many... John Cleese, Rowan Atkinson, Breckin Meyer.
Seth Green.
Amy Smart.
Seth Green. What
Seth
a cast.
Green.
What a cast.
John Lovitz, Kathy Najimy.
You know this was a remake, by the way.
Really?
And the OG is amazing. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So many good scenes in that. This episode of Freeze All Motor Functions...
Also, Westworld is a remake. Sorry, Jared. Go ahead with our ad read.
This episode of Freeze All Motor Functions is brought to you by the amazing folks at Felix Gray Glasses. The good folks at Felix Gray create effective, research-backed products to improve humans' relationships with technology, making them a perfect sponsor for a Westworld podcast. I'm wearing mine right now. I love them. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see. It all started 5 years ago when Felix Gray set out to create eyewear that would make it easier and more comfortable for humans to stare at screens. Why? Because whether you like it or not, we all live in a digital world now, and living in a digital world means we are forced to look at screens, screens, and more screens all day, every day. And the thing about these screens, Ross, is that they are wreaking havoc on our eyeballs and brains and causing things like eye strain, headaches, and blurry vision.
Yeah, my eyes are on fire every day, Jared. Mm-hmm. Every fucking day because I'm staring at screens and I got to put on the Felix Grays to save them.
The blue light emitted from these screens is the culprit, and Felix Gray's clear blue light lenses filter 15 times more blue light than other clear lenses. 9 out of 10 customers experience relief from eye strain, headaches, and or blurry vision, and Felix Gray glasses don't just do a great job protecting your eyes and brain from the evil of screens, they're also incredibly high quality and built to last. Felix Gray makes clear blue light glasses as well as sunglasses and amber blue light glasses, all of which are phenomenal. Felix Gray also has both non-prescription glasses and prescription glasses available, so they truly are for anyone and everyone. Ross, you do the prescription route because you have bad eyes.
I do. I can't see shit without my glasses or my contacts.
You're like Velma. Yeah, Velma, right?
Sure.
I can't see a thing without my glasses.
And just
Scooby-Doo.
Everybody in history without good vision, I think. Probably not just Velma. But yeah, no, I love Felix Gray. I've been wearing them for years now. I've been wearing contacts and glasses since I was like 10 years old. But Felix Gray, with what I do for work, I'm on computer screens and my cell phone screen all day. I love watching TV and gaming after I get off work, too, so that doesn't help. And Felix Gray saves my eyes because usually by about 4 o'clock every day, they really start to hurt. They burn, they itch, it sucks because the blue light coming out of the screens impacts them, Jared, and that's what Felix Gray does. It protects you from that blue light.
Check out Felix Gray's full selection at felixgrayglasses.com/famf. Where you'll have access to free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges for a completely risk-free shopping experience. That's FelixGrayGlasses.com/FAMF. And finally, this episode, we have the whole storyline surrounding Caleb's family. Frankie and Uwade are packing up to get driven to a safe house by Caleb's buddy Carver, except Carver gets carved up and replaced with a host. And luckily, Frankie finds out just in time. As Frankie noted, she had trained for this, and I really would have liked to have seen what she would have done. What? Shoot him in the air? Shoot him with the airsoft gun again?
Look, she's the character from Signs that keeps leaving glasses of water out the whole movie, and you're like, what the fuck is with this little girl? And then in the end, it turns out there was a reason, and she's a hero or something. I'm assuming Frankie's going to play some type of heroic role at some point.
Same.
Just based on the fact that they've involved her as much as they have over the first few episodes here, but yeah, she, what does she notice?
There's blood on Bear Bear, and then when she's in the backyard,
oh, yeah,
she's
Bear Bear's got a fucking bullet hole in him, I think, because the other guy was probably carrying Bear Bear when he got popped.
And blood on him.
Bear Bear's been shot, and she's like the smartest child on earth, so she immediately puts it together, oh my god, Carver's not Carver, and saves the family. But she's probably a goddamn robot anyway.
Do you think Carver used Bear Bear as a shield?
A bear shield?
And, yeah, like, dude, whatever you have in your hand is what you hold up if somebody points a gun at you, right? So, like, Bear Bear took one for the team, and then also he took one still. The team did.
Bear Bear should have been bulletproof.
Yeah, that's too plush, you know?
What do we think is next for Frankie and Uwade? They run away. They just run down the street. They don't even get in the car. Just run down the street.
Serena, yeah, give me your thoughts on this whole storyline before I derail.
I was going to say I really don't care. Like, I'm going to be honest. It's not doing it for me. I think Uwade, she kind of sucks. Like, she's kind of sucked since the beginning when she was like, you have a very patient wife and your PTSD isn't real. And I think Frankie's a little annoying. Like,
You think Caleb is Jesus, but you don't care about his family?
I don't think Caleb is Jesus.
You said it earlier. You said you had a campaign going, hashtag Caleb is Jesus.
You said that. It's recorded.
It's in the notes here.
Yeah, nope. Okay, fine. I don't care about his family. You're the one that thought they were robots.
Okay, look, I'm just saying, to your point, I'm in camp Caleb can't be a hero, and therefore I don't really give a shit about his family either, but this is another interesting piece of the story. Like, the least interesting part to me is Caleb and Maeve right now. Kind of because of what Jared said, which is like, okay, you guys just wandered into a blatant trap. Kind of because they haven't given us really any information about what their role is going to be in this whole story. And we already have our protagonist. I've got a dude to root for, Bernard. He's out there with Ashley Stubbs doing work, actually doing something productive. He just lived every life possible in the past, future, and present, right? So I care about what happens to Bernard because he's the only person that can actually, or robot, that can do anything about this, right? As far as Caleb goes, it's like, meh. But then when it comes to his family, that's where I get interested again, because I'm like, okay, this could tell me why they care about him at all. What is it that anybody would be interested in these three alleged human beings?
Yeah.
You know?
It was weird that they have their own storyline now. Like that, the Frankie Unawaite storyline is now completely separate from Caleb's, and it's its own storyline in the show.
Yes,
like they're now main characters.
They have escaped, right? What's the last thing we see them doing?
They run down the street together after they kill Carver.
Seemingly getting away, assumedly going to be on the run still next episode. But yeah, you're exactly right. That is now broken off from the rest of where we're... I mean, they're going to be off doing shit, you have to think, right?
They're like main characters in this season now.
So we will see. Yeah. And I like that element of this season, that we are getting new people while we're re-meeting everybody that we've already done in three seasons of, right?
And that happened last year with Caleb, and that went well.
I mean, I think that was kind of the, you know... I don't want to put it all on Aaron Paul, but it just being him as the new guy didn't really work. You needed to have a mix.
It wasn't the art, it was the artist.
Yeah, a little bit, but I mean, I don't think anybody, Joy and Nolan included, would argue that they executed well on season three. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it was circumstantial based on what happened with the pandemic. I think it was a perfect storm of shit, all right? They have very successfully climbed out of it through three episodes. This is an impressive rebound. One of the most impressive rebounds I've seen on TV so far. Like, especially considering how far they fell in my eyes during season three. So for them to have put something together that I'm invested in again emotionally is awesome. It feels really good getting a win here.
It is. I do feel like this whole episode was a win.
But no idea what's going on with his fam.
I
like that I can track everything.
Yes.
That I can tell what's happening in our three or four different stories that we've got going is nice.
Serena?
Ross, you raised a really interesting point, and I wondered if either of you had a thought on this. Like, what is the impetus for replacing Carver at all?
You think Carver's impotent?
Like, I get why they want Caleb. Like that. I have my theory on that, but I don't have a theory on why they give a fuck about it.
So,
like, why when they're replacing Carver, I'm like, why?
This is part of my "we don't know enough yet" thing, because it seems like the strategy is to replace every human eventually, or to infect every human eventually, replace or infect. And I guess we have to assume, in the case of Carver, he didn't get a fly in the nose, right?
He got killed by a host, Carver.
So that's a big deal, right? They went out of their way, created a host, Carver, full-blown
replaces.
To get to Caleb, which puts him in a very important position, obviously, supporting Serena's theory that he is going to be the hero.
I think if they didn't catch Caleb in the 1920s park, they were planning to have his family kidnapped to get him that way.
Okay.
That's my take.
Okay. Or I mean, yeah, that makes sense, right? But they didn't get his family. His dumbass got himself caught, though.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, his little girl was smart enough to avoid the robots, but his dumbass is not smart enough to do it.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I don't know, man. It's I'm loving seeing Bernard again. That was too long of a wait. He is what is dude's name? The actor?
Jeffrey Wright.
Jeffrey Wright is incredible. Again, one of the first things I ever saw him in was Casino Royale, and I was like, there's just something special about this dude. He just, like, stands out.
Got a great voice.
He's just one of those guys. He's got that gravitas that you want in one of your leading characters on a TV show or in a movie. And, yeah, phenomenal voice, which I love the way he's using it with his, like, all the knowledge he's got in his head now, again, sort of laying in even more, sort of like, it's almost like, you know, that character in Watchmen, the blue dude with the dick. When you know everything, it's depressing.
Manhattan.
That's
Dr.
too much.
Manhattan.
You know too much.
I know what his penis looks like.
Right. And it's blue, but it's depressing too. But I love this dude. Jeffrey Wright is unbelievable. He's my MVP on this show. Off all the seasons. If I'm looking back at the scope of Westworld so far, it's not Dolores. It's not nobody's name. I don't know anyone's name anymore. Who are you?
I'm J-Bone.
Who are you?
That's Serena.
Jared, Serena, okay. What's the
Dolores, Maeve, Teddy?
Who plays Dolores?
Oh, Evan Rachel Wood.
It's not Evan Rachel Wood. It's Jeffrey Wright. This is the dude. He is Westworld to me, and seeing him in the only role on the show that seems like he could actually do something to help the humans pleases me.
That does it for Freeze All Motor Functions Season 4 Episode 3 recap. But don't turn us off yet. I want to remind you quick. We had 10 winners of our June rate and review contest, and they are FSX Lutzex, BMLPO, change your name, please. Red O2, Murdix, Josh Ibar, Rob San 92, MJ underscore 36, Brentonius, Gunterfelt, Mike 45801, and French Fry 2595. If I just said your name, please shoot an email to jared@bolandmedia.com with subject line FAMP contest winner. We will hash out the logistics from there. Congrats again to all those winners. Thank you for participating, and send that email as fast as possible so we can get these all sent out at once. I don't want to have to like send out a pack in like 3 months if I can avoid it, please. You can and should follow us on Instagram at FreezeAllMotorFunctions and Twitter and TikTok at FreezeAllMotor for Westworld and FAMF updates all season long. And if you prefer to watch your podcasts, every episode of FreezeAllMotorFunctions is also available on YouTube. And the big thing for me is, if you just have no idea what we look like and you want to like know what we look like, just go to the YouTube and watch a video for like 30 seconds. Because some people are like, wow, that is not what I expected Ross to look like. I thought he'd have way, way more muscles.
Jeez. Okay. Hurts.
Sorry. People will probably think that about me too. You know?
You got anything to say about my balls today, Jared?
Not today. But I do have something to say. God. If you have video production experience, Premiere Pro, or whatever the heck that Apple one's called, we are looking for video interns to make clips from the podcast for our social media for this season. So shoot an email that says FAMF intern as the subject line to jared@bolandmedia.com.
FAMF.
Yeah, really, you just need some Premiere Pro preferred experience. It's pretty easy. We'll just send you the video file, give you the time cues, and you just caption up and make the clip.
That's it. You'll be helping out with the show. Yeah. Appreciate you.
Be helping out with the show.
Nice social media internship there.
You can follow me at Jared Borislow on all social media. And if you like Formula One, you are required to check out my Formula One content brand, Formula Bone, where I make previews and recaps for every single Formula One race and pump out an ungodly amount of F1 social media content at Formula Bone. Ross, where can the people follow you?
At WR Bolin on Twitter and Instagram. Also listen to the Ross Bolin podcast. And Oysters, Clams, and Cockles will be covering House of the Dragon Season 1 starting on the back end of August.
And Serena, how about you?
I am at Serena underscore Therese, which is T-H-E-R-E-S-E on everything.
There we go. It's time for the NPR style sign-off. Freeze All Motor Functions has been brought to you by Bolin Media and is hosted by me, Jared Borislow, along with Ross Bolin and Serena. The show is produced by me, Jared Borislow, at the Bolin Media Studios in Austin, Texas. Special thanks to Phil from DC, a.k.a. Schnapple, on SoundCloud for our intro music, and Brad Hess for our outro music. Until next time, FAMP!
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 FAMP! FAMP.
Freeze All Motor Functions.